On the clearest of nights, when the winds of the Ethereum were calm and peaceful, the great merchant ships with their cargoes of Arcturian solar crystals felt safe and secure. Little did they suspect that they were pursued by pirates.
Endemic to the cycles of the galaxy, similar to the greater political violence of warfare, piracy is a unique and timeless criminal act, a form of theft that targets ships, whether crossing vast oceans of water or the greater emptiness of space. Wherever there are goods to be traded and sold, there are those who would seek to steal them, rather than barter or buy. The galaxy can be a dangerous place for those who attempt to navigate between planets and stars. Light years from aid, and depending on the galactic authorities in power, responses can be, at best, distant, and at worst, irrelevant. The life of a pirate is brutal and violent, as they must learn to be resourceful, operate with minimal supplies, and utilize violence to steal the wealth of others. In some cases, the vessel itself was the prize, and pirates would commandeer the ship itself to be added to their armada, or scrapped and traded for credits or other necessities. Sometimes, targets would rather fight than simply turn over their wares, thus necessitating a greater show of force by the would-be pirates seeking to take them. Even so, and even if the pirate wins, he will then have his own allies with which to contend, if he's not careful, as competition, and other roving pirate bands to deal with, who might want to take for themselves these ill-gotten gains. Whatever the case may be, piracy has always had a place in the galaxy, for those adventurous, daring, and just crazy enough to make a life carved from blood, sweat, and plunder.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Age of Piracy.
Piracy has always existed in the galaxy from the earliest days of interstellar travel. From the burgeoning days of the Bith species to mankind's first step off-world in the galactic core, it has grown or waned in prevalence depending on the strength of a central political and legal authority of any given era, often increasing during times of strife or instability, or being contained by strong, law-respecting governments. During eras of peace, such as during the time of the Galactic Republic after the Sith Wars, piracy was one of the few issues that remained a constant, however. The Republic, with its vast resources and Jedi peacekeepers, were able to keep the activity in check. The era of economic growth and booming interstellar trade certainly made many appealing targets. However, with a lack of major wars to invest money and soldiers into, the Republic was able to respond in equal measure. This would decline over time, however, as senators grew corrupt and had less of an interest in committing time and energy beyond the borders of their own worlds, leaving some outer rim and distant planets to fend against pirates themselves. This inevitably led to some worlds resenting the Republic at large and would serve as a motivation for them to seek to break away as part of the Confederacy of Independent Systems during the Clone Wars. Conversely, some worlds flocked to the banner of the Empire that promised a return to law and order. Despite these promises and its powerful navy, however, the Empire did allow some criminal enterprise to flourish, including limited piracy whenever it suited the Empire's aims, or simply through the corruption of its own political leaders.
How you doing, you old pirate? So good to see you!
Of Pirates and Privateers. Not all pirates are crews of ill repute, or only there to make a quick credit. Sometimes, piracy is legitimized as a tool by a government to harass an opponent's ability to ship and trade. Both the Rebellion and the Empire had turned to the utilization of privateers to attack and cripple one another. Privateers were civilians or vessels contracted by governments for paramilitary roles, essentially legalizing pirate operations under letters of marque and reprisal. A letter of marque and reprisal, often referred to simply as a letter of marque, served as the contractual agreement governing the operations of a privateer captain on behalf of the government. It outlined the terms, conditions, and limitations of the partnership, as well as the rights and responsibilities of both the privateer and the contracting authority. During the Galactic Civil War, the Alliance to Restore the Republic extensively employed privateers through this mechanism. Letters of marque could be issued by various high-ranking officials, including the Alliance Chief of State, Mon Mothma, her Chief of Staff, and Supreme Commanders of the Fleet, Ordnance and Supply, and Sector Commands. During the Galactic Civil War, the Rebel Alliance reluctantly employed privateers to disrupt Imperial shipping, despite mistrust of this mercenary nature. The Empire, similarly, utilized privateers under Palpatine's authorization, tolerated so long as they didn't directly interfere with Imperial interests. Following the Battle of Endor, the New Republic's use of privateers declined as Admiral Ackbar, an opponent, gained influence. Many retired, while some persisted in raiding or joined the New Republic against the Imperial remnant. However, Imperial Moffs began issuing their own letters of marque. During the crisis of the Reborn Emperor, the New Republic again employed privateers, though by 11 ABY, privateering by both sides was nearly phased out. Privateer activity thrived in the Hapes Cluster, often aligned with political factions. Prince Isildur pursued a Hapen privateer who killed his brother, while Han Solo once operated as a privateer in the region as well. Other governments issuing letters of marque included the Allied Teon Sector and the Centrality, with corporations like Tejco and Sarosub sponsoring privateer-like mercenaries to harass economic opponents as well.
You will pay for your insolence.
Insolence! We are pirates! We don't even know what that means! Open fire!
Methods and Madness.
Sometimes the spoils are credits, or other valuables that can be sold. And sometimes the prize is the target ship itself to be added to the pirate fleet, stripped for parts, or sold out to fund the next expedition. In any case, the goal of a pirate is usually to cripple a ship so that it can be boarded and looted or stolen. Space pirates favored the ion cannon as a primary weapon in their arsenal. With its ability to incapacitate entire vessels, it facilitated their boarding and plundering endeavors. Often, pirate crews divided into distinct roles. One group specialized in disabling ships and their armaments, while another focused on breaching hulls to pillage valuable resources, such as credits, spices, comlinks, and weapons. Attacks must be quick and violent to prevent a target ship from having the time to calculate a hyperspace jump, or for reinforcements or law enforcement to arrive. In very unlucky circumstances, a ship might appear less defended than it actually is, and put up a fair fight to repel its would-be marauders. Pirates typically do not call their attacks raids, but instead refer to their activities as a, quote, cruise. This is when they search for an appropriate vessel or planet-side target, which they refer to as a, quote, prize. Cruises can last anywhere from days to months, based on supplies and willingness of the crew to endure, or barring an encounter with superior armed authorities. Brutish and often short-lived pirate captains simply jump into space and attack wildly, while the more successful captains pre-plan any expedition, poring over cargo manifests and meticulously examining space routes and lanes for a premium, loosely defended target. Sometimes, however, fate brings prizes simply based on chance, or if a desperate crew is in need of resupply. Pirate captains also tap into criminal intelligence networks to find targets, follow up with rumors, or simply carve out a backwater region of space and force those living there or passing through to pay dues. Keen pirates are also adept at using their environments both for attack and defense. Barricades can be used to hamper travel through space lanes by dumping debris or pushing asteroids into the route of oncoming ships. As they slow to navigate the hazards, the pirates ambush their prey. Additionally, these environments serve as a method to hide the defenders if they prove to be too heavily armed, so the pirates can melt away into asteroid belts or space debris to hide from counterattacks and pursuers. The dagger technique involves setting an ambush and planting or playing a saboteur against the prize vessel's crew, who will drop the ship out of hyperspace or otherwise cripple the ship at a predetermined location and time and allow the ship to be raided by their comrades. Lurking the zone is a method of attack in system, in an area that ships are known to drop out of hyperspace and continue to their destination, usually a planet or space station. This can be very risky, however, as law enforcement or military retaliation is sure to come quickly from the destination, so speed in and out of the engagement is paramount. Dirtside raids are a term for an attack on a planetary settlement, usually targeted because of its weak or absent defenses. Unguarded mining installations are also tempting targets for a chance at a wealthy haul, though even a small farming community could be at risk, depending on the pirate's needs and overall ruthlessness.
I smell profit! Ha ha! Nice, juicy, fat, warm profits. Well, we've secured the ship, but she seems deserted. Imbecile! That is the oldest trick in the book. The runs are probably hiding in the ventilation system.
Oh, right. Didn't think of that.
Why does that not surprise me?
All that matters is you find the younglings and bring me the crystals. If anything gets in the way, kill it!
But boss, they're just kids.
They're just kids. When will they learn?
In case you lack motivation, remember that on the black market, these crystals are priceless.
Cut throats and gold hearts. Despite piracy being galactically recognized as illegal, the morals and motives of the rogues were as varied as the individuals who partook in such deeds. Some pirates looted and pillaged with violence and terror, killing indiscriminately out of sadism and greed. Others found themselves as outlaws, but living by their own code of honor, and helped rather than hindered the Republic or the rebellion against more menacing foes. Pirate crews also ranged in size from one-man operations to entire fleets. The title of Pirate King or Pirate Queen was bestowed upon certain leaders within the pirate community as a symbol of their influence. Notable holders included the King of the Phosphora Belt Pirates, the Pirate Queen of Ando, and the Pirate Queen of the Veiled Sorority. During the Western Reaches operation, several pirates bearing this title aligned themselves with separatist holdouts. Xur 8, a former pirate and warlord, adopted the title after assuming control of the Kingdom of Kron, renouncing piracy to rule as a legitimate monarch. Similarly, the pirate Nim was sometimes referred to as Pirate King after seizing and governing the planet Lok.
What do we have here?
Who are you?
More importantly, my friend, who are you? Now all that's left.
Notable Corsairs.
The Blazing Claw stood as the quintessential emblem of piracy, recognized across millennia and immortalized in numerous holovids. Through the ages, numerous raiders' factions adopted variations of this iconic symbol, yet its essence endured. A claw or claws engulfed in flames, a timeless representation of piracy's enduring spirit. Although the symbol serves as a generic universal symbol for piracy, many pirate bands adopted personal marks and sigils to identify themselves and build their legend. Many pirates worked for larger criminal organizations, such as the Hutt Cartels or Black Sun, while others struck out on their own to make names for themselves. Some notable crews.
The Bloodscars, a pirate syndicate operating in the Shelsha sector. It was led by a human known as the Commodore, headquartered on Geparin. Governor Barshnis Chard covertly supported the group, aiming for sector secession from the Empire, but Mara Jade thwarted this scheme. In 0.5 ABY, the Bloodscars expanded their influence, establishing a swoop gang on Dronost to acquire Rebel Alliance weapons and backing corrupt police in Janissar on Ranklinch, potentially to steal I-7 Halrunners. Their boldest move, an attempt to pilfer a transport carrying 50 AT-STs, was thwarted by Jade. Disra sought to enlist them in his plan to crush the rebellion in the sector, but the scheme failed, resulting in the deaths of the Commodore, Kaldra, the destruction of the Geparin base by the Star Destroyer Reprisal. In another notable raid near Ashgas Kov, the Bloodscars assaulted an entire convoy with 10 ships, destroying the primary targets after looting them.
Originating from the Desmar faction of Essowin, the Desmaric pirates were led by Sartan, Chief Mictus. Their fleet included vessels like the Asagov Raider and three Skipray blast boats, crewed by over 100 members, with the most skilled assigned to the blast boat. Commencing operations in the Hathal sector circa 7 ABY, their plunder by 8 ABY remained modest. Supported by Krev Bombassa of Pembroke 2, who supplied freighter travel plans for targeted assaults, Bombassa sought to manipulate the gang's leadership, notably undermining Mictus's confidant, Ginzet. Additionally, the pirates extorted outlying settlements, leveraging their ships and armaments to coerce tribute from civilians.
The Bloody Bones. Rav was a male Fiorin pirate who was the owner of a bounty clearinghouse and cantina, the Golden Gorg, during the era of the Sith Imperial War and the Second Imperial Civil War. He was also a collaborator to the One Sith and Darth Krat's Galactic Empire. His pirate symbol, the Bloody Bones, was feared across the galaxy. Cade Skywalker, the descendant of Luke Skywalker, worked for Rav as a pirate for a time, adopting the Bloody Bones symbol as a tattoo on his arm. He would eventually work his debt off to Rav, but continued to subcontract with him from time to time aboard the Minok, with fellow crewmates Deliah Blue and Jiraiya Sin, before Rav betrayed his former protege to the Sith. Rav was known for his cybernetic leg, lost to the blade of a Jedi, and a prosthetic eye.
The Binar Pirates, led by Captain Kath Scarlet, were active in the Corellian sector, maintaining bases on the twin worlds of Talos and Trelus. Despite their presence, they were considered among the lowest criminal elements on these worlds, earning a reputation for disreputability even among fellow criminals. Some pirates adorned themselves with the insignia of Black Sun, and on Talos, they operated from their bunker. Constantly pursued by the Corellian security forces and the Federation of the Double Worlds, they also clashed with Akuan anarchists following the Battle of Yavin. The Binar Pirates expanded their control over several regions in the Corellian system, utilizing vessels like the Binar Razorcat, Trifecta Star, and Rayless Lantern. In engagements, they deployed the M3A Skyke fighters and Z95 AF-4 headhunters.
Notable individuals and captains: Arias Zazin, a male human, served as a privateer and a pirate for the Alliance to restore the Republic during the Galactic Civil War, primarily operating in the Mid-Rim, notably the Ado sector. His remarkable success as a privateer led to his inclusion on the Empire's Most Wanted list, with a bounty of 250,000 credits posted on his head. Zazin earned distinction as one of the first individuals to engage the Yuuzhan Vong in battle and survive. Characterized by the Alliance as a penitent obsessive, Zazin's meticulousness, control, and efficiency were evident in his privateering endeavors. While he pushed his ship and crew to peak performance, he maintained a margin of error and employed straightforward tactics to capture his targets. Governed by a strict code of conduct encapsulated in his, quote, dozen rules, he demonstrated unwavering dedication to his crew, even undertaking perilous maneuvers, such as blind hyperspace jumps, to ensure their survival against overwhelming odds. Zazin displayed a cunning as a pirate, orchestrating elaborate schemes to deceive and prey upon unsuspecting targets, including setting up a convoy service to ensnare unreconstructed Imperials. His tactical acumen enabled him to assess situations accurately and take decisive actions to ensure his survival.
Hondo Onaka was a Weequay male, served as the captain of the Onaka Gang, a notorious pirate group operating on the remote world of Florum during the final years of the Galactic Republic. Born into poverty, Onaka was sold into slavery by his parents as a child. He eventually escaped captivity by stowing away on an off-world vessel, thereafter founding his pirate crew on Florum. Throughout the Clone Wars, Onaka's gang thrived by engaging in spice trafficking, kidnapping, and extortion. Among his infamous exploits was the abduction of Count Dooku, leader of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Recognizing Dooku's value, Onaka attempted to ransom him to the Galactic Republic for a substantial sum of spice. The incident culminated in a hostage situation involving Jedi Knights Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker, who, with the aid of clone troopers led by Senator Jar Jar Binks, managed to rescue Dooku. Subsequently, Onaka clashed once more with the Jedi on Felucia, where he faced resistance from a team of bounty hunters led by Sugi. Despite their efforts, Onaka and his pirates were repelled. During the Clone Wars, Onaka struck a deal to supply missile launchers to the rebel forces on Onderon at the behest of Skywalker. However, his base was later raided and destroyed by General Grievous, compelling him to ally with a group of Jedi initiates to escape. In 20 BBY, Darth Maul and his apprentice, Savage Opress, sought Onaka's assistance on Florum, only to be met with fierce resistance from Onaka and his loyalist pirates. Supported by Jedi Masters Kenobi and Adi Gallia, ultimately Onaka emerged victorious, defeating the Sith brothers and their bounty hunter allies.
Ponda Baba, also known as Saw Kee, was a male Aqualish pirate known for his volatile temper. He formed a loyal partnership with Dr. Cornelius Evazan after rescuing him from a bounty hunter on Corellia. Although tempted to betray Evazan for the bounty on his head, Baba ultimately remained faithful, and they began smuggling spice for Jabba the Hutt. Their paths crossed with Luke Skywalker in Chalmun's spaceport cantina on Tatooine, where an intoxicated Baba initiated a confrontation. Despite Skywalker's attempts to avoid conflict, Baba attacked him, resulting in Obi-Wan Kenobi severing his arm with his lightsaber. In a failed attempt to replace Baba's arm, Evazan's medical efforts nearly cost him his life. They eventually parted ways, with Baba vowing revenge, though they later reconciled briefly. He spent years seeking a replacement arm, resorting to drastic measures, such as attempting to switch bodies with an Aqualish senator and raiding Naboo's top cybernetics facilities.
Crimson Jack, also known as Redbeard to Han Solo, was the notorious pirate master leading a band of space raiders in the Outer Rim. Initially relying on gunships for their operations, Jack's gang stumbled upon a disabled Imperial cruiser post-battle of Top Rawa. Seizing the opportunity, Jack commandeered the vessel, significantly bolstering their piracy capabilities. With financial backing from Hutt crime lord Jabba DeSilic Tyr, Jack restored the cruiser, enhancing his raiding endeavors. Encouraging smugglers Solo and Chewbacca aboard the Millennium Falcon, Jack used a tractor beam to bring them aboard, plundering Solo's reward for rescuing Princess Leia, Organa. Jack allowed Solo to depart with a tracer planted on his ship, planning to strike again later. Subsequently, Jack captured Leia and Solo, intending to ransom Leia to the Rebel Alliance. In a clever ploy, Solo and Leia deceived Jack into believing in a Rebel treasury on Drexel. Escaping amidst the conflict with Drexel's inhabitants, Solo crippled Jack's ship and erased his star charts. In a showdown, Han outwitted Jack, ultimately defeating him in combat. Jack was known for his ruthlessness, employing brutal methods like the burning, yet he balanced his cruelty with practicality, sparing Solo and Chewbacca for future schemes. His aspirations extended beyond mere piracy, seizing opportunities like acquiring the Imperial cruiser to advance his ambitions. And now, a word from our sponsors.
See it.
But why is the rum gone?
Don't let this happen to you. With new DOS X-Wing Spiced Space Rum, all the goodness of rum with all the goodness of spice. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Christian.
This is Jordan. Thanks so much for tuning in over the HoloNet and flying aboard with us. Hey, before we get into the discussion of this episode, I wanted to remind everyone, if you want to support the show, please follow us on all of our socials. We are on Instagram, Twitter, X, Facebook, and Discord. You can find all our links in the description or just simply Google Star Lords, and I'm sure all our links will be on the first page. You can also give us a 5-star rating and review or share the show with people who you think might enjoy it. We really enjoy this. This helps us get to more listeners. I believe Apple and Spotify are the two big ones where you can share, but I kind of want to pump up that those Apple reviews a little bit more. So you Apple listeners, we got lots of Spotify, but I want a few more on Apple. beyond that, also, you can support us financially if you want to send a few credits our way. We are on patreon.com/StarLores for just $3 a month, $3 USDs a month. Come on, with all this inflation, it's not that much.
We also don't want to have to resort to piracy to keep the ship running.
Precisely. Don't make us. you can support the show and get all the access to the bonus episodes and whatnot. What else? I think that's it. Also, if you had any fan fiction, music, Star Wars collections, anything related to Star Wars that you're into, submit it to us. We want to share it if we can, and you know, promote the community and all that. I think that's it. Did I miss anything, Christian?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, cool.
On with the episode.
Yes.
Pirates. One of the
Armady.
Promise I wouldn't do that the whole episode. It's one of the key ingredients to the mix that is Star Wars. You have samurai, you have sci-fi, 80s sci-fi, you have
like Western.
Western, you have trucker.
Yeah.
And you have pirates.
It's true.
It is one of those key ingredients to the mix that makes Star Wars what it is. Piracy has existed since forever, both in real life and in Star Wars, which makes sense. It's just banditry on boats or ships.
Yeah.
It is funny that it is such a... It's a thing that will never go away. And both in real life and I think in the Star Wars mythos, right? Like for thousands of years, no matter how strong the government is, no matter how weak the government is, unstable or stable, it's just a matter of degrees of how bad it gets. Because everyone just wants to make a living. Robbing.
Yeah, I think people forget like there's still piracy even today.
Yeah.
It's sort of something you don't really think about, but it does happen. It's probably not as frequent as it used to be, but...
But and again, it increases in areas and places of instability, right? Places where there's rampant poverty or places where the government is weak and there's no
there's no security forces.
Forces, right? And again, like it's pretty much just banditry on the waves. So even in eras and places like where you had city states and like long roads to get to the city states, they often would get preyed upon by bandits who would just wait for someone going along the path to ambush, right? Yeah. So it doesn't have to be on the ocean to be essentially the same practice. It's just whether or not you're using boats.
Right. But it's also probably why a lot of city-states grew. It was actually to protect like the trade routes and stuff from banditry.
Certainly, right? And why strong empires, like you would probably have less banditry within the borders of an empire than externally between like uncharted territories, right?
Yeah, I was actually...
That isn't to say that doesn't happen. Pirates were actually prolific even in the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
They even captured Julius Caesar.
Right.
And there's actually a funny story where can't remember off the top of my head, but I think he was insulted at how much they were ransoming him for, which is a funny story.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting how piracy affects the course of civilization. I was reading this, I think it was an article years ago, but it was like very interesting. It was this professor, some like anthropology professor, I think, but he was just sort of like opining on where like the origin of like states, but even our modern conception of a state isn't what it's kind of different, but like,
oh yeah, it's pretty new.
Yeah. Like the origin of kingdoms, you know,
nationhood.
Yeah. Nationhood. And a lot of it had to do with basically just protecting agriculture because of banditry. And raiders. And then basically what would happen is it would almost start out like, and again, it's for lack of a better term, like quasi-private. Like the agriculturalists would just, they would pay for these services. And then eventually, like over years and generations, they would become some of the most like powerful people in society was the people who were part of these security forces, right?
Become kind of like pseudo chieftains or kings.
Exactly. Right? And then they would like sort of make the infrastructure the backbone of the central government, right? Yeah. So it's just kind of interesting because he's sort of like opining on the origin of states or civilization or empires or kingdoms.
Yeah. Otherwise, you'd always have like farmer.
Yeah. You just kind of have co-ops. Tribes, right? Yeah. Like you have kind of tribes who settle in an area, and it probably wouldn't have been even necessarily necessary until like agriculture started in earnest when you were like stuck in one place.
Yeah. Cause if you have just two roving tribes, maybe you'll fight over a shared resource once in a while, but you can break away cause no one's static, right?
You're
both moving. But once one group settles, then everyone knows where to find you.
Yeah,
including
exactly.
People who want to take things from you. So then you have to start investing in security.
Right.
And that probably starts with, okay, I'm going to watch my brother's back. He's going to watch mine. Maybe I don't want my brother to get killed in the next fight. So maybe we'll outsource the security to someone else.
Yeah. And then the security ends up becoming like an aristocracy almost. Right?
And that's also kind of how feudalism works too, where like the knights and the barons, duty is also to protect their serfs from things like banditry and other foreign powers, but also internal threats.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just to say like piracy, it kind of, I mean, we're only guessing you can use your imagination in the Star Wars universe, how it's like affected the course of history, you know, like, but I think it's like an interesting thought experiment.
Yeah. And just like it adds to the loneliness of space travel where, okay, you're in deep space. It's just you and your ship.
Yeah.
No one's coming to help you if someone attacks, and that's a perfect place for someone to attack you, is ambush you when you're all alone, right? You're essentially going into the dark alleys of space at midnight, right?
Yeah, but it also seems like it would be, because space, like a galaxy, even a small galaxy, is so vast. It seems like that's why it kind of makes sense. I think earlier we were reading in the script just how like they often would wait where people come out of hyperdrive to commit their piracy, because like, if you're trying to find someone in the middle of a hyperspace route somewhere.
It's like trying to find someone in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, exactly.
But once you know what the trade routes are, like if you're a colonial ship going from the Americas to Europe, you're like, okay, we know the route. We know generally where to find you.
Yeah.
And that's where the golden age of piracy emerges in the Caribbean as these ships are making that voyage, right? Otherwise, like, good luck trying to find another ship in the middle of the entire ocean,
right?
But if you zero in on those like space lanes and known drop points, you're like, okay. And same again, I always like to bring piracy back to like on land, same way as traveling a highwaymen, right? They ambush you on the highway because they know that's where you're gonna be.
Yeah,
you don't have to search the entire forest for your target. You know where your targets are always are and where they're transiting between. The earliest documentation of piracy is in the Bronze Age in the Mediterranean. I'm sure, again, if you consider banditry as part of that earlier, like you said, it's like the yin and the yang of civilization, order and chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
The raiders and bandits versus the farmers and civilization, city dwellers. And even things like Vikings are like the piracy of land targets. So like a raid, instead of raiding another ship, you're raiding a settlement. So it permeates like all of history.
Yeah.
And same in Star Wars. One thing that's kind of like a subculture too in our society is people's fascinations with piracy.
Typically, when you say pirate, people's minds default to the golden age of piracy that we just mentioned in the Caribbean with a certain style and aesthetic. Truthfully, that's an era that I'm not actually super familiar with. And it's also been hyper romanticized. So it's, for me, like, I'm not a historian, and especially not in that era. But it's really hard to pick what's like a romantic conceptualization versus like the reality of the situation. So just bear that in mind as we talk through this next little piece, because I'm totally open to getting fired at by people who actually are really into pirates.
I mean, like, there's obviously like Pirates of the Caribbean. It's a big cultural motif.
Yeah.
But even like older stuff like Peter Pan and stuff.
Yeah, no, like it goes back into our culture, right? Yeah. Even probably close to when piracy was happening, people always like imagine like you're back in England thinking about, you hear about these raiders on the sea, and there's always that romantic element, right? But one of the things I wanted to bring up is like pirates are either like an anarchist fantasy, a libertarian fantasy, a republican fantasy. Like everyone kind of reads themselves into historical piracy. They're like, no, they're all anarchists, and they were like rebelling against the system and created their own pseudo-utopia on Tortuga and like all that. And then you have people who are like, no, they actually had like a system developed, which they did actually have a pretty intricate system, and also hard to say for all pirates because we're talking about so many different groups. But generally they had a code and like their own internal governing structure, right? Where you had your captains and even your I'm really not good with naval terms.
Yeah.
Whoever their like sergeant at arms or whatever they're called, had veto power against the captains. So it's a lot more egalitarian in terms of how they vote, especially compared to the society that they're coming from at the time. Again, like colonial Europe, where you had like very strong class distinctions.
Yeah.
A pirate would seem a lot more egalitarian and closer to us today than the society that they were coming from back then. But like I said, it's hard for me to pick apart what's actually true and what's like kind of a romantic reading into by people today.
Yeah.
In Star Wars, you kind of have a little bit of that. You have like your noble privateers and stuff who are like, you know, your lovable rogues, kind of Han Solo-ish type archetypes.
Yeah.
That play like a heroic role in the stories, but they're job by definition is robbing people.
Yeah.
And then conversely, you have like really ruthless like villains that are pirates, and pirates serve as like a pretty good background villain when you don't want to have like a big enemy like the Sith or, you know, a big political conflict. It's always easy to just throw in pirates as like this ever-present threat. Gives the Jedi something to do during eras of peace, gives your like galactic security forces, which often are developed for exactly that purpose. When there's not like a big galactic war, is to fend off piracy.
Yeah.
So again, even in those eras of peace, there's still some action going on. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's piracy in sort of. I feel like that's not true. I was gonna say I feel like it's often depicted as very just like only criminal elements, not really organized. But then there is guys like Talon Card who are kind of, they're technically a mercenary, but he obviously has engaged in some piracy as well.
Yeah. Also, I guess it helps sometimes to see piracy. It can be a profession, but it can also just be an activity.
Right? Yeah.
Like you are an individual that engages in piracy when you're doing pirate stuff, but also like by trade you could be a bounty hunter, by trade you're an assassin or something else, right?
Yeah,
you're not always just pirating.
Yeah.
And you don't always have to pirate either. There's people that can get away from the lifestyle, so
it's true.
I guess piracy can also be a verb as much as a, I bet there's a lot of you pirates out there that are pirating games and music and TV, so there's true. Your modern piracy.
Yeah, it's all digital piracy. Yeah. Now
it will never go away.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Yeah. On that note, that's all I got to say about pirates. Really cool niche subculture. I know there's people out there that are just really into pirates, and I fully expect to hear from you. And do let us know what you think, what your thoughts are, anything that we missed or you want to add.
Also, if there's any like cool, like literal pirate stories in Star Wars that are about pirates, I'm not.
There are plenty. Some of the characters we covered are like from, a lot of them came from like the 80s comics.
Yeah.
Which is like, they're the kind of weird ones, but they have a couple of the cool pirate stories. And then obviously like.
Like a Davy Jones locker in space.
Yeah. like again, those obvious heavy influences, yeah. Right? Especially from that romantic pirate period of like film pirates. Right? Yeah. But yeah, open to listening to your thoughts on piracy.
Indeed.
And is it a legitimate activity?
Yeah. At least in Star Wars, they don't need peg legs. They can just get...
cybernetics. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure some still get peg legs. Ponda Baba.
Just for the aesthetic.
Ponda Baba is a funny story because he's just like... Everyone knows him. They might not recognize him by name, but he's a guy who gets his arm cut off at the cantina in A New Hope.
Yeah, yeah.
And pretty much his story from there on, then on is him trying to get his arm or get an arm, and he goes to like wild methods to try and get it back. And yeah. So it's a good place for like silliness and like cool stories, and you know, you could have really ruthless cutthroat pirates. You could have like high fantastical pirates, like. It's a pretty rich area that can be explored with any different way you want to take it, which is cool.
Definitely. Well, like always, reach out to us. Give us your best Star Wars pirate stories. And we'll see you later.